visit on this Saraswati Thakur, lectured on this text for a whole month. And it can easily be done. We have put the text on a handout for you. So first we're going to chant this. Well, today we'll do it just like we do for a Bhagavatam class. Do we have enough text here? Haribol. So yeah, we'll do this as in a Bhagavatam class, except the purport, which as you know just goes on for a very long time, we'll take in sections. Tomorrow, we're going to try to participate in the swinging too. Well, I'll try to arrange it so that everybody's in this class goes first. We can do that, I don't know. We'll see. So here's Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, text number 1. We'll just say after me. Huh? Om Bhagavate Vasudevaya Brahmadi Asya Yataha Anvaya Itaratas Charteshu Abhigya Swara Tene Brahma Veda Ya Adi Kavaye Muhyanti Yat Surayah Tejo Vari Mridam Yata Vinimayo Yatra Tri Sargum Risha Namna Prena Sada Nirasta Uhakam Satyam Varam Imahi Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadhyasya Yatam Vayat Itaratascha Te Shvabhidya Swarat
Janmadhyasya Yatam Vayat Itaratascha Te Shvabhidya Swarat
Tene Brahmaridaya Adi Kavaye Muhyanti Yatsurayaha
Tene Brahmaridaya Adi Kavaye Muhyanti Yatsurayaha
Tejo Vari Mridam Yata Vinimayo Yatra Tri Sargum Risha
Tejo Vari Mridam Yata Vinimayo Yatra Tri Sargum Risha
Dhamna Svena Sada Nirasta Kuhakam Satyam Varam Vimahi
Dhamna Svena Sada
Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Janmadhyasya Yatunvaya Itaratascha Arteshu Abhigya Swara
Janmadhyasya Yatunvaya Itaratascha Arteshu Abhigya Swara.
Let me give you some tips here. What you have here is you have the words. If you look at this little supplement, you can see that the phrase is Janmad Asi Yataha, and then it's followed by the word Andayat. So when those words come together, they in Sanskrit like two boxcars coupling together, is the beginning and end of the words undergo certain changes. In this case, the aha becomes an O, and the N, the A, drops out. The only way you can possibly say this is ignore the apostrophe and pronounce it like Yatong Vayad. You see? Then the second place you have itarataha followed by arateshu. These words link together. Huh? If you look in the anvaya, itarataha, should be a dot under that. Cha arteshu. So these all kind of merge together a bit in their sounds. So you just do it like it's itaratash, cha, te, and then that final U becomes a V. And the best thing to do, the simplest thing to do is itaratas, cha, teish, and then put the V in the next word, swabhigyan. Atateish, swabhigyan, swarat. This is, okay, so let's try it again. I don't know if that clears up anything.
Janmadhyasya yatum vayat itaratascha te shabhigya swarat.
Janmadhyasya yatum vayat itaratascha
te shabhigya swarat. Tene brahmaridaya radhikavaye bhuyanti yatsuraya. Ejo vari mridam yatha dinimayo yatra trisar ghumrsha.
Ejo vari mridam yatha dinimayo yatra trisar
ghumrsha. Damna sena sada nirasta kukhakam satyam param dhimahi.
Damna sena sada nirasta kukhakam satyam param dhimahi.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Janmadhyasya yatum vayat itaratascharte svabhigya swarat.
Janmadhyasya yatum vayat itaratascharte svabhigya swarat.
Tene brahmaridaya adi kavaye bhujanti yatsurayah. Tejo vari mridam yatha vinimayo yatra trisargum mrsha.
Tejo vari mridam yatha vinimayo yatra
trisargum mrsha. Namna svena sada nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhimahi.
Namna svena sada nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhimahi.
Anybody else want to try? Yeah, go ahead.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Janmadhyasya yatam vayat itarascharte svabhigya swarat.
Janmadhyasya yatam vayat itarascharte svabhigya swarat.
Tine brahma vidaya adi kavaye bhujanti yatsuraya.
Tine brahma vidaya adi kavaye bhujanti yatsuraya.
Tejo vari mridam
One more person on the channel. I tell you what we're going to do next time. We won't chant like exactly like this, but I'll do it once and then we'll go around, huh? Everybody can do it. So practice. Actually, you should memorize this verse. This first verse is read my Bible. So memorize this verse. So practice. We'll have different people try it tomorrow. Hmm? So let's do the word for word. Hmm? to say after me, Om,
Om,
my Lord,
Namaha,
offering my obeisances,
Bhagavate,
unto the personality of Godhead,
Vasudevaya,
unto Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva, or Lord Shri Krishna, the primeval Lord. Janma Adi, creation, sustenance, and destruction. Asya, of the manifested universes. Yataha,
from whom?
Anvayat, directly. Ittadataha, indirectly. Cha,
and.
Arteshu, purposes. Abhigyaha,
fully
cognizant.
In
other words, cognizant, fully in knowledge. The word cognition. No.
Swarat,
fully independent.
Tene,
imparted.
Rama,
the Vedic knowledge. See, so here in this verse, the word Brahma does not refer to Lord Brahma with a long A, but to Brahman, Vedic knowledge. Lord Brahma comes in this verse a little later on, well, a few words down, Adi Kavaye, the Adi Kavi, the first learned person, who's that Lord Brahma. Okay, so where are we? Okay. Vrida, consciousness of the heart. Yaha,
one who.
Adi Kavaye,
unto the original created being.
Mufyanti,
are illusions.
Yet, about whom? Surayaha,
great sages and demigods.
Tejaha,
fire.
Radi,
water.
Nidam,
earth.
Yata,
as much as.
Vinimayaha,
action and reaction.
Yatra,
whereupon.
Trisargaha,
three modes of creation.
Creative faculties.
Amrisha,
almost factual.
Namna,
along with all transcendental paraphernalia.
Saida,
self-sufficiently.
Sada,
always.
Nirasta,
negation by absence.
Kuhakam,
illusion.
Satyam,
truth.
Param,
absolute.
Dhimahi,
I do meditate upon. So now here's the running translation, which is long, huh? O my Lord Sri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. That's Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations. And he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. As one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water, Only because of him do the material universes temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature appear factual, although they are unreal. And therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representation of the material world, and meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. Now, before we go on, I've just broken this up for you into the, you might say, the statements. So it begins with this word, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, which is not really part of the verse. It's, of course, a famous mantra. That's a Vedic mantra that's chanted quite frequently. And so that's the first part. With the word Om being an indicator of the absolute truth. And one of the things we are going to study particularly is this idea of the absolute truth. I gave you here the purport that's in the book, but actually the purport to this really begins in the introduction. Prabhupada starts the introduction, and the beginning of the introduction of Srimad Bhagavatam, the first group of pages, the first, which is mostly a life story of Mahaprabhu, but the first two paragraphs, or three paragraphs, is really a commentary on this first verse. Prabhupada sometimes is in the habit of doing this. Does the same thing in the Nectar of Instruction. He puts the purport, the first verse in the introduction. So this idea, the absolute here, which is the ultimate source of all energies. So here, this Om, Namo, and then to the personality of Godhead, Bhagavate, and then Vasudevaya, in other words, the son of Vasudev. Here, I want to point out to you in Sanskrit, there's a way of doing things. You take the word Vishnu. Right? And there's a rule that you take this first vowel and you do something which they call in Sanskrit strengthening in it. You add an A to it. So it becomes Vai, and then you take the end of it, which ends in a U, and you change it into a word that ends in an A. You change it to the A declension. Words that end in U are declined in one way, and A in another way, and I in another way, and so on. You change it to an A. So to do that, this U becomes an AV, and then you add an A in the end. So you get, from Vishnu, you get Vaishnava, which means derived from, dependent on, son of, servant of Vishnu. That's how this word Vaishnava is derived, by the simple Sanskrit rule. So similarly, here you take the word Vasudev, and you go with the same thing, so you strengthen this vowel by adding an uh to it, so it becomes long A, Vasu. And since it's already in the A declension, you just leave it alone. Derived from, son of. So here, since Krishna's father's name is Vasudeva, with a short name, this indicates the son of Vasudeva. This is an important fact because this is a mantra that there's also an expansion of Krishna who's called Vasudeva. And Prabhupada actually makes a case in this first purport that here it indicates particularly the son of Vasudeva. His case becomes garbled in the book because there was some proofreading mistake in the original edition. I'll show you this.
So here he wants to say that that's why he's saying this Vasudeva with the long A here denotes the son of Vasudeva, therefore it means Sri Krishna. So that's the first thing. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya is directed toward Krishna. Not everybody uses it that way. Both are legitimate. Then the next thing began, Janma Adi Asya Yataha. Janma Adi Asya Yataha. This is a direct quotation from the second of the Vedanta Sutras, in which it is a definition of Brahman, or what Prabhupada is calling here the Absolute Truth. Brahman is that from whom the origin, Janma Adi, means birth, etc. Birth, etc. means birth, maintenance, and destruction. Asya, of this meaning, this world, Yataha, from whom? Of course, it's squished together. I mean, the sutras are information compression technology. This is the direct quotation from the Vedanta Sutra, which is concerned with inquiry into the Absolute Truth. It begins, Atattva Brahma Jignasa. Now, one should inquire into Brahman. Brahman is to be investigated. That's the first sutra. The second sutra is this one, Janma Dasya Yataha. Brahman is that from which proceeds the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. So you have heard Prabhupada say that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the author's own commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Vyasadeva compiled the Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Krit, Krishna says in 15:15. So here he puts this quotation. So it not only indicates the topic of the Absolute Truth, defines it, that from which everything comes, but by direct quoting, it is the indication of this whole. What is this book about? It's about Janma Dasya Yataha, who is also known as Vasudeva Krishna. So that's the third. Anvayat itarataha cha arteshu abhigyan. Abhigyan means cognizant or has perception. Arteshu of all things. Directly and indirectly. Anvayat can mean here directly, and it can mean, and itaraha means just the opposite of that, which is indirectly. So he's absolutely aware of everything, of all affairs, of all purposes, everything that's going on, both directly and indirectly. What that means we'll discuss. So you see here, now we're getting definitions of who it is we are talking about. What is this Bhagavatam about? So Vasudeva, who is Janma Dasya Taha, and who is Abhigyan, directly cognizant in everything, and indirectly. And then Swarat, independent. Fully independent. It means fully independent. Doesn't depend upon anything else. Which is another distinguishing feature of the Absolute Truth. Then, the next thing it says, Tene Brahma Hrida Ya Adi Kavaye, who imparted Brahma, that is to say Vedic knowledge, into the heart, Hrida, of the Adi Kavi. The first, it says here, created being, but Kavi literally means smart person, learned person, doctor.
Kaviraj. You call an Ayurvedic doctor Kaviraj, right? Or a poet's called Kaviraj. Kavi. That's Brahma. Lord Brahma, the Adi, the first. Who from the beginning received, this will be narrated, this whole thing will be narrated in Bhagavatam. And Muyanti Yat Surayaha, about whom, or maybe they are bewildered, who the suras, the sages and the demigods. They are bewildered, either about him or by him. You could take it either way. Or illusioned. And here the example of the way that earth, water is seen in fire or land on water, meaning different sorts of illusions or mirages. The fire will look like water sometimes, and the land will look like water. So on. So he's the source of the deluding potency, which deludes even the demigods. They can't understand him. Yatra Trisarga Amrisha. Trisarga, that means the creation of the three creative faculties. He is goodness, passion, and ignorance. Prabhupada describes him in the commentary. You could also say the three worlds, upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. Because of him, these things, which are temporary and unreal, they appear, as Prabhupada says, almost factual. As almost factual, or they have no real existence. They're not sat, they're asat, but because of their relation to Krishna, they appear to have substantiality. So here in this in 6 and 7 that I've named, he's describing the material energy about which bewilders even the demigods and makes this world, which is unreal or temporary, appear substantial or real. But the Lord himself, Dhamna Svena Sada Nirasta Kuhakam, he exists self-sufficiently, always, in his own abode, in his own Dham, in his own place, with his own paraphernalia, and that place which is near us to Kuhakam. None of that illusion is there. It's free from illusion. This is Satyam Param. The subject here is Satya Param. Satyam means the truth, and Param, the highest truth. Prabhupada uses the word summum bonum, the Latin term summum bonum, which means the highest good. Satya also means goodness, so the highest goodness. And I meditate upon him, dhimahi. This dhimahi appears at the end of Gayatri mantras. It's actually an optative plural. It's we ought to meditate upon. It's in the plural. We meditate upon the Lord, dhimahi. And it's in the optative. It means it's the form of an injunction. Let us, or we ought to meditate on that. So this dhimahi, the Gayatri mantras which are chanted by Brahmanas, end in this dhimahi. And so he's quoting here, invoking this Gayatri mantra, because that this it is the Brahmanas who take this inquiry into this Satyam Param, the highest truth. So that's really the breakdown of this the statements in this 111. Any questions about this so far?
In the week for demons, who is the week?
The teacher and his students, the guru and the shishas. That's the we. I just read this in Sri Varaswami's commentary, kindly translated for me by Brian Vijayamani.
You mentioned the interpretations of Vasudeva.
Yeah, we'll get to this, okay? In the purport, let's begin with this part. The Prabhupada begins by saying, obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Vasudev, directly indicate Lord Sri Krishna, who is the divine son of Vasudev and Devaki. Then here's a little bit of confusion on the part of the editors of Bhagavatam, the American editors of Bhagavatam. This fact will be more explicitly explained in the text of this work. Sri Vyasadeva asserts herein that Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead and all others are his direct and indirect plenary portions or portions of the portions. And you look at, where does it say this in his verse? What Prabhupada wrote, and which the original, I have to send a note off to them to correct this, you know, they're afraid of changing the Bhagavatam, but what Prabhupada really wrote here, this is the book Prabhupada brought with him, one of them. So here's what he wrote. Obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Vasudev. By the way, he didn't have any diacritics, so. Directly indicates Lord Sri Krishna, who is the divine son of Vasudev and Devaki. The fact will be more explicitly explained later in the text of the Srimad Bhagavatam by the direct statement of the author in his assertion that Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead and all others are either his direct or indirect plenary portions or portions of portions. We now know he's referring to what verse? Who can quote it? Huh? Ete Chamsakala Punsam Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. This occurs in the third, three, if you want, I'll give you the direct third canto. Third chapter, text number 28. He's referring to text 28. And that's why he says later in this text, the author will more directly assert that the Ete Chamsagala Punsam Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. In the third chapter, he has been describing about 20 odd incarnations of the Lord, one after the other, and then has mentioned also so Krishna, and then he says, but then he says, all these are either Amshas or Kalas. Amsha means parts, and Kala means parts of parts, or expansions of expansions. But Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. He is the supreme, because he is the Bhagavan himself. In other words, he's different from the others. They expand from him, but he's the original. And this is what Prabhupada is referring to. Now, the first people that edited this for English didn't know this verse. They were new devotees, and they didn't understand, you know. Now we would all immediately recognize this, at least those of us who have been around for a little while. So this fact will be more explicitly explained later in the text of Srimad Bhagavatam by the direct statement of the author, that is to say Vyasadeva, in his assertion that Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead and all others are either his direct or indirect plenary portions or portions of the portions. This statement, 28, is considered to be the thesis statement of the Bhagavatam, which is why Prabhupada quotes it here, 1 through 28. It's called the Paribhasa Sutra. That the key text in terms of which all of the texts are to be understood. There's a certain kind of text like that that has certain kinds of characteristics, and in Jiva Goswami discusses this very clearly. That's why I mentioned Jiva Goswami in the way. And it's in the Krishna Sandarbha that Jiva Goswami analyzes this text, Ete Chamsakala Kutsam, and shows that it is the Paribhasha Sutra. It has all those characteristics of a thesis statement. Thesis statement, it says in the text, is supposed to have these characteristics, and it does. It's not just arbitrarily declared, this is the central text. And remember, thesis statement is the text in light of which all others are to be understood. Because somebody may complain, well, it only says this once in Bhagavatam, but if it's the Paribhasha Sutra, I want to know that word, Paribhasha.
Write it down. Is that right? I'm going to get a diagnosis.
Huh?
Bhasha, no what?
That's a speculation on my part.
Well, it's either Bhasha or Bhasha? I think it's Bhasha, maybe Bhasha. We can't get there. And it may be a long way, right? I think maybe it's essay. Anyway, the thesis statement.
So that's what Prabhupada. So here Prabhupada is making his case. He's saying that, first of all, that's what this text is about. And in this context, this Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, which is like when you worship Shalagram Shilas, this is the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Or every deity on the altar has a mula mantra. And before you offer to them, you say their mula mantra. So there's a mula mantra, Krim Krishnaya Namaha. But when you go to Balaram, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Because Vasudeva is just a sort of used as a general Vishnu Tattva mantra. But here he's saying it actually indicates Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. That's what this is about. And so he wants to talk about who Krishna is, and that he is the, as Prabhupada has this wonderful phrase, Supreme Personality of Godhead. God, the word Godhead in English is really an English version of a German word, Gottheit. In the head part, I don't know if it's whether it's which means divinity or Godhood, godness, divinity, and is used was used in German mystical literature to indicate, you know, the sort of just the absolute, you know, the transcendent absolute source of everything. So Prabhupada uses this word Godhead to indicate the entire absolute truth. But that absolute truth, as we know, has a personal aspect and an impersonal aspect. And Bhagavatam says three ways: Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan. As Brahman, the impersonal Brahman, as the super soul in the heart, localized, accessible, close by, and as personality reveals only in his internal energies, nothing to do with this world, Bhagavan. All three are aspects of the absolute, this one absolute. So therefore Krishna is the personality of Godhead. It's not just Godhead, it's also impersonal. supreme personality of Godhead. Well, it turns out there are many, you can say, personalities of Godhead, because Krishna has so many expansions. But the one expansion who is the origin of all of it is the supreme personality of Godhead. So that's a really great, I mean, a brilliant phrase to come up with like that. And I was really, I was happy with it when I was first encountering the Krishna consciousness movement, because I had so many issues with the word God that the supreme personality of God had completely disarmed me. It got me by surprise. All my defenses are up against God, but here was so it turned out to be useful in that way. So here we can see in the purport what it says here. This fact will be more explicitly plain in the text of this work. They didn't realize Prabhupada literally meant later on by the author, where he asserts herein, he asserts, you know, later on. But. So Jiva Goswami, again in the Krishna Sandarbha, which is basically the section is a commentary on the Bhagavatam. He explains this with his Paribhasa Sutra. And again, another verse. So here's Prabhupada's doing.
In religious circles, this is known as proof texting. To support a statement with giving texts. And where the texts are authoritative, it works really well. So Prabhupada says that, and then you back it up. He says, first the author himself says it, later on. Jiva Goswami explains it in great detail in his commentary on 1.3.28. And now he says, Brahma himself, the original living being, remember, because he's mentioned here as the Adi Kaviye who first received, so that's an authority. He says it in his Brahma Samhita, with the Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Vajami prayers that refers there. He says it too. And then also he quotes the Samaveda Upanishad, where it is also stated. Therefore, in this prayer, the first proposition holds that Lord Sri Krishna is the primeval Lord. And if any transcendental nomenclature really means a system of names, I think usually, huh? Nomenclature. Is that a name that's just part of a systematically understood or arrived at name? Any transcendental nomenclature is to be understood as belonging to the absolute. Here's the word absolute personality of Godhead. It must be the name indicated by the word Krishna, which means the all-attractive. And then more proof texting. In the Bhagavad Gita, in many places, the Lord himself asserts himself to be the original personality of Godhead. And this is confirmed by Arjuna. Remember what Arjuna says in the 10th chapter, you are the supreme Brahman, and so on. Param Brahman, Param Dhamma, Vittam Paramam Bhavam. And he says, and also, and Arjuna says, great sages like Narada Vyas say this of you. So Prabhupada puts that right here. And then he quotes from the Padma Purana. It is also stated that out of innumerable names of the Lord, the name of Krishna is the principal one. Now here we run into another textual problem. Here's because if you look at these sentences, they don't make any sense. Well, they make some sense, but they don't. Look, he says here. Vasudev, with the long A, indicates the plenary portion of the personality of Godhead. And all the different forms of the Lord being identical with Vasudev are indicated in this text. The name Vasudev particularly indicates the divine son of Vasudev and Devaki.
Now see, so here he says that Vasudeva, the long A, which he's making a big case that it's the patronymic of Krishna, son of Vasudeva. Here he says Vasudeva indicates the plenary portion of personality Godhead, expansion. Vasudeva, Shankar, San, Parjuna, and Aniruddha. And all the different forms of the Lord, being identical in Vasudeva, are indicated in this text. Now what is that? You see, it's just, if you think about it, what does this mean? So when we go to here, I think we can detect. So Prabhupada begins here. After quoting that the Pradama Purana says that of the innumerable names of the Lord, the name of Krishna is the principal one, Prabhupada writes, therefore, although Vasudeva indicates the plenary portion of the personality of Godhead, so notice that the although, then something goes wrong here, and all the different forms of the Lord being identical with Vasudeva. Vasudeva indicated in this text is princely meant to be indicate the divine son of Vasudeva and Devaki Shri Krishna. So you probably have to look at it. What I think has happened myself is that when this was typeset, they dropped a line. They dropped a line out. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a line, just my speculation, okay, therefore, although Vasudeva indicates the plenary portion of the personality of Godhead, and all the different forms of the Lord being identical with Vasudeva indicated in this text, what I think it was is there was probably two lines that begin with personality of Godhead. And one of them got missed and it wasn't picked up in the proofreading. And that would be the original thing. So it's clearly you can see that the editors couldn't figure out what it was, because they put in a sense it doesn't really make sense, except they want to say that Vasudeva indicates Krishna, huh?
Are you saying it doesn't make sense because it contradicts Prabhupada's argument?
Yeah. Here, what I think is Prabhupada has an argument. Therefore, although Vasudeva indicates the plenary portion of the Lord, or the personality of Godhead, he then has another sentence which is saying, still, here in this case, it really does indicate Vasudeva, the original personality of Godhead. Therefore, although, you see, it says although Vasudeva indicates the plenary portion of the personality of Godhead, something, and all the different forms of the Lord being identical with Vasudeva indicated in this text, that is, the Vasudeva indicated in this text, or somewhere. That the Vasudeva in this indicated this text is principally meant to indicate the divine son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Maybe since they're all the same, Vasudeva can be also used for this one. I don't know. I don't know if it's possible to reconstruct it since Prabhupada's manuscripts are gone. But he has some justification for saying that although the word Vasudeva also refers to a plenary portion, here in this text, it principally indicates the son of Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Yeah.
So you say then that in this paragraph, Srila Prabhupada's, you could say theological opponents would be Vaishnava groups like the Madhva school, who say it's not really Krishna.
Yeah, right.
It's other Vaishnava, it's right. Other Vishnu forms that can be called Vasudeva.
Yeah, that's right. You see, because although you notice that Prabhupada is making the case that this text is really about Krishna, the word Krishna doesn't show up in it. It's the proper name is Vasudeva, and then there's words like, well, there's Satyam Param and Yataha, that's from which, you know, but the name Krishna doesn't show up. So Prabhupada is making a case that really what's being indicated here is in fact Krishna, and the word Vasudeva also means Krishna, as well as other plenary portions, and if you look at what the Bhagavatam is about, that's the appropriate thing here. Because people will argue like that. There are commentators of the Bhagavatam who do not recognize Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
I'm not sure I understand what they're arguing it could be. If Vasudev indicates Krishna because Vasudev is Krishna's father, who else could it be?
Well, the word Vasudeva the long A means also one who is all pervasive, or is the Lord of the Vasus. There's different ways of reading this. What is this about?
Let me check it out. I have my dictionary right here, so it's your dictionary.
You'll see exactly what it says. I mean, I don't really want to confuse anything with everybody, but if you really happen to pay attention, you notice that the sentences don't quite make sense. And then when you look at Prabhupada's original, you can see that there was a form of an argument there, and that somehow along something dropped out. The typesetters missed a line, and it wasn't picked up in the editing. I don't know if we can reconstruct his original argument from this. I don't think so, but you can see what he was trying to whatever the argument was, he was trying to justify. Okay, here's see the first definition. This is the Mona Williams. First definition of Vasudeva with a long name is patronymic of Krishna. It's also the name of a kind of asparagus. Relating to the god Krishna. That's pretty good on the dictionary. See, Vasu means, it's taken from the verb vas. So Vasu also means one who dwells in all beings. Because vas means to live or to dwell. Nivas, Jani Nivas, Ishavasya, the one who dwells everywhere, lives everywhere. Also, all pervading. Generally, is that taking mean the all pervading Lord, Vasudeva. So that's another meaning. But it's also, when they give it here as Vasudeva, it's the patronymic. We have patronymic. John's son of John, McDougal, and all the Macs and the O's and the Fitzpatrick. That's right. We have patronymics also.
And I'm not so serious with them, but I'm just curious. Were you serious when you said it's a flavor of asparagus too?
No, that's what it says here. When it's in the feminine, Vasudevi, it's asparagus racimosus. This is the feminine, though. Sure, it's not. It's the name of various kings. So that name is mentioned here. Class of beings peculiar to the Jains. The Jains and so on. And so on. You can get so confused reading dictionaries, can't you? Okay, so the point we want to make is Prabhupada's cases here that this text is for all these different reasons is indicating simply that the text is about Krishna and that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Bhagavatam is about Krishna. If you see how long the 10th canto is, it's clear that everything else leads up to that. And then there's the 11th and 12th canto, are kind of short little codas, kind of finishing things off. The real thing about about this the text is that it's about about Krishna. Okay. So now he goes on. Now what time are we supposed to end at 8? Huh? Is that right? We're supposed to go. It's supposed to go from 6:30 to 8:30. Oh, okay. All right. Because there's 9 pages of purport. Of purport here. Okay. Again, Vasudeva, or Lord Sri Krishna, is the cause of all causes. He's thinking of Sarva Karana Karanam, Brahma Samhita, of all causes. He's the supreme cause. Everything that exists emanates from the Lord. Prabhupada will come back to this everywhere, this notion of absolute truth. And then in the next paragraph, now Prabhupada goes off to a little bit to describe how this is so. How everything emanates from the Lord will be explained in later chapters of this work.
Yeah, several times it's described in kind of different ways.
So, this is quite a text. If you believe, you know, it says in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, and there's like such a, you know, brief description. It's true enough, but how it happened in detail. First of all, here we have not just, we have two creations, the sarga. You see, in the Bible, when it starts out, it seems like already there's land and water, and something is there to begin with, that he straightens it out. Where the stuff comes from, that's described, that's sarga. The basic elements of the universe are created really by Mahavishnu, and then Brahma appears, and then Brahma takes those elements and puts them together. That's called the Visarga, the second creation, which is really what's described in the beginning of Genesis. And very, very great details, all of this, most of which is entirely baffling to us, because we're dealing with somebody who's really operating on a much higher level than we are. But anyway, there's quite a bit of detail, so it's explained quite a bit. How everything emanates from the Lord is described. And now he goes on and he talks a bit about Bhagavatam. This work is described by Mahaprabhu as the spotless Purana. Interestingly enough, Mahaprabhu is in fact quoting the Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam describes himself as the Amalam Puranam. Huh? I can find out just a minute. Where is it? It's somewhere in the 11th canto, I think, or 12th canto. Yeah, 12, 13, 18. Oh, yes. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. Oh, it's very dear to the Vaishnavas. Huh? Nice text. Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. It is most dear to the Vaishnavas because it describes the pure and supreme knowledge of the Paramahamsas. You notice how Prabhupada had already said that. Sri Krishna is always meditated upon by the Paramahansas, who are the perfected ones among those in the renounced order of life. He's mentioned that. You will find, as we become more and more familiar with the scriptures, that Srila Prabhupada thinks in slokas. And you'll just see some text that he's saying something, but after a while you begin to realize everything he says. Sometimes he indicates it's a quotation, in another case he just says it, but it comes out. So this is the, yeah, so here's this nice text, 12 to 13, 18. Sri Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana, Amalam Puranam. And the significant thing, he wants to introduce Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here in the beginning, because he's our paradigm, our authority for understanding Bhagavatam and for understanding devotional service. So he accepts this as the Amalam Puranam. It is most dear to the Vaishnavas because it describes the supreme, pure and supreme knowledge of the Paramahamsas. Nice. This Bhagavatam reveals the means for becoming free from all material work, together with the processes of transcendental knowledge, renunciation, and devotion. Anyone who seriously tries to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, who properly hears and chants it with devotion, becomes completely liberated. That's a statement. This chapter, canto 12, chapter 13, is in fact, the whole chapter is called The Glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. So if you haven't gotten that far, it's worth skipping ahead. So Prabhupada referring here as to that. Now, the history of the Srimad Bhagavatam is also very glorious. It was compiled by Sri Vyasadeva after he attained maturity and transcendental knowledge. This is also stated in Bhagavatam. He wrote this under the instructions of Sri Naradaji, his spiritual master, and now he summarizes the story, which you'll find in this canto in chapters 4, 5, and 6. How Bhagavatam came about to be appeared, how Narada Muni found him morose after he had compiled all the Mahabharata and everything, and Narada advised him to write upon the transcendental activities of Lord Sri Krishna. You've conveyed all so much of the Vedic literature, but you have not sufficiently described Sri Krishna. So Bhagavatam is specifically mentioned as for describing Sri Krishna. These transcendental activities are described specifically in the 10th canto of this work, but in order to reach the very substance, one must proceed gradually by developing knowledge of the categories. Okay, I don't know exactly where this use of substance and categories comes from, but what it means is the foundation, the substance, and the attributes, the foundation or the source and everything which comes from the source. Actually, huh?
I had a question. That's very popular. I think the word vastu comes in the next verse.
The word vastu. Vastu means substance. Yeah. Right. It is, and it's vastu. And guess what? The same grammar we were talking about? Vastava. There's both, in Bhagavatam is about vastu, the substance, and vastava, categories, meaning everything which comes from the substance. See, this is the same process, right? This U becomes an A, V, and an A is N, and this is... So this word vastu means substance. Let's check it out. Sanskrit dictionaries. I was told in graduate school that knowledge means knowing how to look it up. Okay, let's see. Vasti, Vasta. see page 930. Anyway, that's for me. The word Vastu is used to mean, you know, these kind of words in philosophy. But they play in Prabhupada, yeah. Well, it's going to be a little complicated to look this up, so we don't care. But anyway, those they do show up in the next word. Vajam, Vastava, Atra Vastu. So when he says this, when he says, in order to reach the substance, that is Krishna himself, one must proceed gradually by developing knowledge of the categories, and everything else that comes from or is produced by or derived from Krishna. In other words, Krishna, Prabhupada mentions this a lot of times at the beginning. You don't jump straight to the 10th canto and especially the Rasalila chapters. But first you have to appreciate precisely who it is we are talking about when we're talking about Krishna. It's not some village Romeo. That too, one has to gain some the philosophical appreciation of who it is and what Krishna is, so we can really truly understand his pastimes, and one has to gain this qualification. So therefore, they're an important point. Here's Maharaj Parikshit, who has only a week to live, and he's going to hear what he needs to hear at the time of death, and he hears the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. They don't skip ahead, you know, let's cut to the chase, let's get right to the, you know, he proceeds upwards. There's all kinds of things that are being discussed about, which was, you know, Shukadev Goswami thought that, you know, he should hear it. So I don't know why, you know, we have a little more time usually. Yeah.
I have a question about the history of the Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
And how it relates to the fact that it quotes the Vedanta Sutra.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna's pastimes was, you know, right around the turn of the year, around 5,000 years.
Yeah.
So sometimes I just have in my mind, like, everything happened 5,000 years ago at once, and then everything Kali Yuga happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if the Bhagavatam itself describes when it was written, but I think we understand Vyasadeva's, or that Vyas still in the Himalayas somewhere, when you never saw him. It seems like the history that the Bhagavatam describes, it seems to indicate that he did some work. Then, you know, they're seeing how things went, and then maybe Narada came and spoke to him. Or do we understand that this actually happened, like he just fired out the Vedanta Sutra and fired out the Bhagavatam? Or is there some time?
Well, I don't know. You know how he does things. I mean, you know, it's very clear that there's a sequence of events that Lord Krishna disappears. But before he disappears, there was this genocidal attempt on the Pandavas, and that the only really surviving person of the lineage of the Pandavas was Parikshit, was saved in his mother's womb by the Lord, and so then. Yeah, he became king. He must have become king after Yudhisthira. I don't think there was an intermediary king. Yudhisthira reigned. It doesn't say anybody else reigned. And then Maharaj Parikshit became, they ascended the throne at Hastinapur because of the victory of Yudhisthira, was, you know, a huge, huge thing. So he was the next one. And so then, sometime before then, after the disappearance of Krishna, I mean, Vasudeva was a contemporary of Krishna. I mean, Vyasadeva was a contemporary of Krishna. And at a certain point, and he was involved in all these, you know, I mean, he was really in the thick of the thing before. Yeah, because you know, Pandava was one of his sons, and And Dhritarashtra was one of his.
So he's actually a
grandpa. Guru was one of, yeah, that's right. It's really far out, but somehow he ends up in the Himalayas, sitting in a grove of berry trees, and doing this literary work. Anyway, by the time, by the time Maharaj Pariksit is leaving his body, Shukadeva Goswami has already heard the Bhagavatam from his father and has left the ashram and gone wandering around. Right? That's already happened. Now the interesting thing is Bhagavatam itself, I've heard some discussions about this and I don't know if it's Bhagavatam itself describes the narration of Naimisharanya Forest. So that means the Bhagavatam that was narrated in Naimisharanya Forest didn't itself include the description of Bhagavatam being narrated in Naimisharanya Forest. So it would seem that somehow the Vyasadeva went back and added something to it. Correct?
That's what I've heard from Dhamma. I don't know where Maharaj got it from.
Yeah, well, anyway, but it would seem that had to happen.
Couldn't it have existed as back then they memorized stories, right? So couldn't it have existed?
Oh, the stories are around, yeah. I mean, when Vyas doesn't mean Vyasadeva was making up original stuff. I mean, there's a lot more than just about Krishna, too. So the Puranas, Purana means very old, means older than 5,000 years. So the stuff about Krishna is contemporary, modern, in the true sense of the word. But many of the other stories, Ritrasura, you can read about. He's in the original Vedas. These are really old stories. A very long time. So he took this material and put it together. And you assume he composes original material also, but he mostly compiles it. And a lot of times he's telling what happened in the past, previous conversations between Vaidura and Maitreya Muni. So Bhagavatam a lot of times has a structure like this, right? I'd really like to be able to trace it out sometimes. So let's say here's somebody talking to somebody, right? It's in quotation marks. But this story about somebody talking to somebody in these quotation marks is part of somebody else talking to somebody else. So then you have another single quotation marks. And that's embedded in another story, so you have double quotation marks, right? And you have a single quotation mark. See, my other word, yes, you know? Put all the quotation marks. Or it would be something worse.
So would the widest quotation marks be Vyasadeva after reflecting it on himself?
I guess so. Well, the widest ones right now that what we have are at Naimisharanya Forest. There's no narration. That's included within. That's the Sutta Goswami Naimisharanya. So he's telling what the Sutta said. Sutta is telling what Shukadeva said to Maharaj Pariksit, who may be telling what Maitreya Muni said to the viewer, who may be telling what so and so said to so and so. So that's substance and category. Vastu and Vastava. So the category just means all those things that are taken from or derived from their ultimate reality. Okay.
Now, Prabhupada begins, the next paragraph is a very interesting way of you know, here, okay. It is natural that a philosophical mind wants to know about the origin of creation. So now Prabhupada is starting to talk about Janmadasyata, or really Atatto Brahma Jignasa, right? About the quest for the origin of everything. Huh? It is natural that a philosophical mind wants to know about the origin of the creation. At night he sees the stars in the sky, and he naturally speculates about their inhabitants. Who lives there? How did they get there? What are they like? Where did they come from? Where do I come from? Huh? Such inquiries are natural for man because man has a developed consciousness which is higher than that of the animals. The author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives a direct answer to such inquiries. He says that Lord Sri Krishna is the origin of all creations. I want to just read you Prabhupada's original text, because you know the English is not standard English. It's a kind of, sometimes it's called, and I guess it's not a friendly way of calling it, but the British called it Babu English. The kind of English that Indians speak, people spoke to each other, you know. If you hear it now, it's further developed. It's English. Hindi and English get mixed up together. But here with the, so anyway, Prabhupada, this is, but his voice comes through. Generally, a philosophical mind is inquisitive to know what is the origin of all creations. He sees at night on the sky and naturally thinks, what are the stars, how they are situated, who lives there, and so on. All these inquiries are quite natural for a human being because he has the developed consciousness than the animals. And to answer at once to such sincere inquiry, the author of Srimad Bhagavatam says that the Lord is the origin of all creations. He is not only the creator, but also he is the maintainer of the cosmic situation, and he is also the destroyer of them. And so on. So and so they've made the English correct, but it sometimes it misses a certain force of personality. Mrs. Prabhupada's voice, unfortunately, is not there. And they, I don't know why they did it. At night he sees the stars in the sky. Why did they leave out? Why did they leave out? Thinks, what are the stars? How are they situated? Who, you know, why did they leave that so? That's, you know, now it's so kind of weird, like, what? You know, do they see some movie? You know?
The first thing it asks is, who lives on the stars?
Yeah, right. But it doesn't say. How are they, he wants to know what they are. How do they get there? Who lives there? So, you know, it's, you know, sort of a natural progression, which, and so on. And the author of Srimad Bhagavatam gives a direct answer to such inquiries. Prabhupada says, all these inquiries are quite natural for man because being he has the developed consciousness than the animals. And to answer at once such sincere inquiries, I'd say sincere, you know, there's Prabhupada put the word sincere in there. Somebody really serious really does want to know these things. Because he's talking about this human capacity just to wonder, and ultimately to wonder about the, some people have said this is really the philosophical question. Why should anything exist at all? Why is there something rather than nothing? And then in particular, why is something? But why should there be anything? And if there is anything, then how did it get there? Where does it come from? And if you want to make it really simple, okay, here's Vedanta for the simplest. You can ultimately, there's two choices. everything came from nothing or everything came from something. And if everything came from something, and that something didn't come from something else, then that has to be a very unique something. Because this is the absolute truth. The other answer, of course, is that everything came from nothing. That's the opposite. Well, Prabhupada will take on this idea because it's the foundation of modern. In the 60s, there was a book published, a children's book, actually, a children's book.
You know how you give these little children books, parents give these little children books to explain what they call the facts of life, meaning sex? This book was called The Origin of Johnny. And Johnny wants to know, where did I come from? So this origin of Johnny, I want to just show you, I'll write you the first sentence, literally, of this book, The Origins of Johnny. It says, in the beginning, was the that's what it said. This is a quotation from the beginning of the Gospel of John, where it says, in the beginning was the Word, right? And where there would be the word, there's a blank. And then they go on and have several sentences about blank. Blank is unknowable. And then they perceive that the sort of Big Bang, whatever there was, somehow or other, did something. It's the most diabolical. And so then it goes all the way through creation from nothing. However, there was this whatever it was that we cannot describe, that's infinitesimal in size and infinite in mass and so on, and that somehow or other it expanded, and then there was subatomic particles, and when they coalesce, and atoms, and molecules, and chemicals, and chemical evolution—you know, the whole Darwinian evolution—and the species develop, and then finally there's the human beings, and then there's you come down to sex, and this was a very explicit book for little boys because the reason it was controversial. As it ends in Johnny seeing his older teenage sister with a boyfriend having sex, a little pencil drawing with his stuff, and then saying, you know, what's going on? It was a controversial book, but that this was how it started. Really something like that. So this is the other alternative, huh? The whole effort of the modern life is try to explain how everything comes from nothing. But it's, to me, it's almost self-defeating because it has to be a really potent sort of nothing. And it has many unusual properties. Now, how does just nothing have properties? And how does nothing anything come from them? So it's... but that's the effort. To get you used to the idea that... And this is described in this point of view is not a exclusively a modern point of view, because Krishna mentions this point of view in the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita. They say asatyam. They say the world is asatyam, without any sat, without any reality. Apatishtam, without any basis or foundation or support. Anishwaram, without any lord in control. They say it has come simply from lust, and so on. But this is they meaning is the demons, is the chapter.
describing the demons.
So if you trace back this notion that everything has to ultimately have a cause and is something and is the origin of everything, you trace back to something that caused everything else but itself has no cause, then you come to something that is actually eternal, self-sufficient, ever-existing. This is what is known as the absolute truth, janma dasya yataha, the ultimate source of all energies.
And now I want to go back. Unfortunately, I didn't think to get this printed out for you, but in the introduction, Prabhupada turns to this topic about the bodily form. He begins this. He says the conception of God and the conception of the absolute truth are not on the same level. This is page 1, right? People may skip this part. This is an important part. The conception of God. And he's going to explain what he means. But now we're talking about these ideas. The idea of God and the other idea, the absolute truth, are not on the same level. The Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the absolute truth. So he's announcing here what the Bhagavatam is really about. The conception of God indicates the controller, whereas what he means by God here is Ishvara, the Sanskrit word Ishvara, which has to do with being the controller. The conception of God indicates the controller, whereas the conception of the absolute truth indicates the summum bonum, which is the word he uses in this purport, or the ultimate source of all energies. So they're really different conceptions, although they may both point ultimately to the same entity. They have the same denotation. Their meaning is connotations are different. There is no difference of opinion about the personal feature of God as the controller, because a controller cannot be impersonal. Of course, modern government, especially democratic government, is impersonal to some extent. A bureaucratic machine. But ultimately, the chief executive head is a person. And the impersonal feature of government is subordinate to the personal feature. So when you come to Ishwar, that God, that is a person. So without a doubt, when we refer to control over others, we must admit the existence of a personal feature. Because there are different controllers for different managerial positions, there may be many small gods. According to the Bhagavad Gita, any controller who has some specific extraordinary power is called a vibhutimat sattva, or controller empowered by the Lord. There are many vibhutimat sattvas, controllers or gods with various powers, but the absolute truth is one without a second. So a controller is someone who has power over others, a god. And in the idea of God, does not contain the idea of being one alone. There can be many gods. But is contained in the idea of the absolute truth is one without a second. We're talking about the source of all energies. If there's two, then where do those two come from? And ultimately, you have to have the idea of one without a second. It's a category of one. That's what he's saying here. It's contained in the idea. Absolute, I mean, when we use the word absolute, it means not related.
not relative. So there's just no second thing. One without a second. This Srimad Bhagavatam designates the absolute truth, or the summum bonum, as the Param Satyam. So that's this verse he's talking about. Satyam Param Nimahi. The author of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva, first offers his respectful obeisances unto the Param Satyam, absolute truth. And because the Param Satyam is the ultimate source of all energies, the Param Satyam is the Supreme Person. The gods or the controllers are undoubtedly persons, but the Param Satyam, from whom the gods derive powers of control, is the Supreme Person. The Sanskrit word Ishwara, controller, conveys the import of God. That's what he's saying in the means. But the Supreme Person is called the Parameshwara, or the Supreme Ishwara. The Supreme Person, or the Parameshwara, is the Supreme Conscious Personality, and because he does not derive any power from any other source, he's supremely independent. Swarat, right? This is a characteristic I will also mean by absolute truth, not dependent upon anyone else. In the Vedic literatures, Brahma is described as the supreme god, or the head of all of the gods like Indra, Chandra, and Varuna. But the Srimad Bhagavatam confirms that even Brahma is not independent as far as his power and knowledge are concerned. He received knowledge in the form of the Vedas from the Supreme Person who resides in the heart of every living being, Tene Brahma Veda. That Supreme Personality knows everything directly and indirectly. So he's just translating out this verse. Individual infinitesimal persons who are parts and parcel of the Supreme Personality may know directly and indirectly everything about their bodies or external features, but the Supreme Personality knows everything about both his external and internal features. The words Janmadiyasya suggest that the source of all production, maintenance, and destruction is the same Supreme Conscious Person. So what the Bhagavatam does is begin with the name Vasudeva, and the name of a person, and of the Lord, and then wants to say that this Lord is also the Param Satyam, and in fact, the God from whom all gods derive their godly powers. And so, anyway, he goes on with something argued. And here also he says, he mentions that Sripad Shankaracharya has preached that Brahman is substance, whereas the cosmic world is category. He uses these same terms. So anyway, that's the beginning of it. That's the introduction. There's also a description of this verse. Let me say just a few more things about this swarat, this independence, or the idea the ultimate source of all energies. In other words, that which supplies everything, but requires no supplies from himself. That's why in the beginning of the Isha Upanishad, in the invocation there, is described as Purnam, that is full or complete or self-sufficient. So much so that if you take this Purnam, this completeness or this wholeness, and you subtract from it Purnam, you take one and you subtract one, the remainder is one.
Om Purnam Madha Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachate Purnashi Purnam Adaya Purnam Udachate.
This is what happens. You take it so complete you can take away 100% and 100% remains. This has to be the characteristic of the Absolute Truth. Otherwise, if it is diminished, then how does he get his resupplies from? It falls into a conditioned soul. Or something conditioned, anyway. So that's what we say, one of a kind. Is like this. Yeah, it's an interesting idea. Like a slice of, like a pizza pie. You take out, hand out your slices, the pie remains whole. Also, you can add to the Purnam, and it still is Purnam. And Sanapudi explains the thing to me that this Georg Cantor, 19th century or maybe early 20th, no, I think 19th century German mathematician, worked out the mathematics of what he called transfinite numbers, or infinite sets. And it's like that. I don't know if it's the same, but it's like that. And Cantor actually went crazy, maybe thinking about these things. But anyway, so say you have a hotel that has infinite rooms. So the thing is, it's full. But you can always check in somebody else, even though it's full. And this is how you think of it. It's time, check-in time, somebody else comes, every room is occupied. So the bellhop comes and blows the whistle. And the guy from room one goes into room two. The guy from room two goes into room three. The guy from room three goes into room four, and so on all the way down the line. One is empty, the new person moves in. Right? So if you can do that with one person, you have 10, 100, a million, infinite people. And the same is, people can check out. And it remains full. They just can. So these are the peculiar properties of transfinite numbers. Anyway, this is what's said is a characteristic of Absolute Truth. It has to have this feature of independence. Whereas, for ourselves, so we are characterized as dependent. Our pizzas go away. You open your wallet and hand out cash and it's empty. You have to go to the ATM to get out of there, but the ATM is not pouring in your account, so now it has to be refilled. So we need supplies. So we are not. That's why the Vishnu Tattva is the category of the one. We're talking about the one without a second. The category of the one. And there's the category of the many. In other words, what the Bhagavad says in the Upanishads, Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam Eko Bahunam Yogadadatikam. Nityaha is a singular, nominative singular. There is one singular. Nityanam is a genitive plural. There is one singular Nitya among many, 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 many niches. One singular Chaitana, conscious being, among many, many, many conscious beings. So two categories. There's the category of the one. In mathematical language, this is a set that has only one member. One without a second. One way to understand that. But there's another set which is relative, has many jostled around, you know, like all the passengers and economy class. we are dependent. Eko bahunam, the one and the many. Eko bahunam yogadidati kaman. The one is supplying everything that is needed or required by the many. For the one is independent, the many are dependent.
Do you understand this? That the category of the one, Krishna, is a different category than we. You can understand that there's no. We cannot cross that line. You can say that here is the master class and here is the servant class. We cannot be promoted to the master. Here in the material world, of course, the servants want to become the master and take over his position. We're competing for supremacy with each other. But there's no such thing in transcendence. We are constituted as dependent. Krishna is constituted. So what if one thinks of Krishna or one thinks of God, that he's somebody that just happens to be in that position. He got there somehow or other by being promoted or standing for an election or fighting his way to the top or something like that. And that conceivably I could do that myself. Then we don't understand. We don't have the right idea of God. Because Krishna just doesn't, he's not accidentally God, he doesn't happen to be God. See, this is why when you say God, it's just the idea of Ishwar. You think, yeah, I can get there. How many people do you think that think that they could run the universe better than God? Right? They all think, oh, but if I could think, I would do it differently. I'd do a better job. It's the same somehow or other. We're in the same group of people. He's just one of us, only he got there. Or he happens to be there. It's a kind of an accident. So the position where you understand that Krishna is the absolute truth, the ultimate source of all energy, this kind of thinking becomes a little more difficult to sustain. You notice that the big demons in the Bhagavatam, they want to become a god, like Indra, usually against Indra. Well, Indra, in fact, did get appointed. And at every month there's a whole change of management. It's just like when the Democrats go out and the Republicans come in. There's a whole change of administration. Even Hiranyakashipu, his ambition was higher. The highest he could think of was Brahma. Because Krishna is actually unassailable. You just can't get there. So we should understand some of the features of this idea of the absolute truth. It's a very profound idea. And the other thing is that the absolute truth being full and complete is a person. And so therefore is Parameshwara. Not just Ishwara, but Parameshwara. So that all is being explained here in this first text of the Bhagavatam about the person of Krishna. If you really sit down and think about it a long time, blow your mind. any questions? Now we're getting toward the end now. Anything you want to talk about? Try to read the rest of this, okay? Make it go faster. I don't know how far we're going to get through with this, but any other questions? No, I don't know. I guess people can leave if they have to catch a Charlie or something.
I see this argument. Also, Ramanuja argues that God, if you think the idea of God, there could be many gods, but it doesn't really make that much sense to me. Because when I think of God, I think of Parameshwara.
No, that's you. Because you're a trained up guy.
Well, but I don't think it has to. I think it has to do with the Indian idea of the gods versus the Western idea of one God. I just don't see why.
Well,
if God means the controller,
yeah.
Then how could there be competitors?
In principle, you see controllers all the time fighting it out.
I meant the controller with a capital P and a capital C.
Well, it doesn't. There are no capital letters in Sanskrit. No. Always the confusion.
I guess.
In principle, there can be many Ishwaras. This say in principle that there's only one, supreme Ishwara, if you start to understand what it means by only one, I think you will begin to also come to the idea of the absolute truth. There is, of course, this notion. I don't see it in as clearly delineated in religious literature from Christian or Jewish traditions. Well, it's kind of it's there, you know, people, but it's just not as precisely distinguished.
Would you say that a lot of times in those traditions they don't really have the idea of the absolute truth, they just have the idea of like the biggest God or something like that?
Yeah, sure. It's just this general awakening in the synagogue.
It's a God in the
Yeah.
But, and a jealous God.
A jealous God, yeah, but then who's the competitors that you have to watch out for?
But that's the point, I think.
Yeah. I'm a jealous God, you know? And then this guy, this Pentagon general who turned out to be, he's in charge of like an the Army Intelligence Department, or close to in charge. Turned out he was going around giving pep talks to evangelical Christian groups. And these were recorded, and it was a little embarrassing for the Pentagon because he saw it clearly as a fight between Christianity and Islam, not just terrorism or extremism, but Islam as such. And he said, "We're going to win," he said, "because our God is bigger than your God." That's what he said.
So imagine he doesn't
have anything
on the absolute
pitch. I don't think. The idea is really there, of course, but also there's something of a problem, a little confusion in this idea of creation out of nothing. Because every time I've seen any theologian try to really describe it, they just end up describing emanation. But it's just from something very subtle, because it does go from subtle to gross, so it amounts to the same thing. Okay, so we'll continue. Please try to read the purport, and by the end of this, we'll be totally convinced that Krishna is the supreme personality. So, by the key day, Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, we have to go to another thing. Cross two.